96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and you're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. This evening, as usual, we're going to have ourselves a wonderful, wonderful conversation. We're going all the way over to the motherland. And we have a spectacular guest, an individual who I am sure that by the end of the show, you're going to be impressed, you're going to be inspired, you're going to be motivated. And we look forward to this lovely, lovely conversation as usual. If you want to be a part of this show, you can telephone us at 323-6232-3256-325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. And so as we continue this discussion, we always seek to get to a place where we can impart knowledge, and we do this not from any sense of trying to impose that on you, but to share, and to share as far and as widely as is possible. So this evening, our guest comes to us from Zambia, all the way from Zambia. She is Mwape Komwenda, the managing director of Crown Television. She's a journalist with over 14 years of experience. She's trained investigative journalist, and she has more than 15 local and international awards. A journalist, and she attaches very special interest in uncovering hidden thefts of public funds, corruption, abuse of human rights, health, poverty, and social injustice. She has won notable awards. Some of these I'm going to leave for her to tell you. But one of the things that she is relentless about is the freedom of the press and seeking to do what is right in terms of her profession and working in such a way as to enhance democracy, freedom, in our country, Zambia. We want to welcome to The Essential for the first time, Mwape Komwenda. Mwape, welcome to The Essentials. Yeah, we have a little bit of a technical difficulties there. We'll work that out. I think she's on.
Good evening.
Ah, you're unmuting. So welcome to The Essentials.
Thank you so much. Greetings to you. It's quite late here in Zambia. It's around midnight.
Yes.
I'm so excited to be part of the Chairman story in the media.
Mm.
I'm thankful for the moment.
Yeah, and we certainly thank you for staying up this late. We know that there's a big time difference. But, you know, what you have to discuss here this evening, I think, is very, very important to share you as a symbol of what is possible. So let's start where we ought to start when we have these discussions. Who exactly is Mwape Komwenda, in your own words?
Okay, so Mape Kumwenda is a young journalist, 38 years, operating in Zambia, one of the few female managing directors of a privately owned TV station called mm-hmm. Crown Television. The media industry in Zambia is mostly dominated by male folk in terms of management.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mape Kumwenda is one of the few that has stood out to be a professional journalist and now managing and partly owning a television station. So she's a journalist of more than 15 years work experience in broadcast media and has worked with three TV stations in her career life,
mm-hmm.
Starting with movie television for about 9 years, then with Prime Television for 3 years before eventually establishing Crown Television, where she's now the managing director. So she's a family person as well, a Christian, a mother of three, and a wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically that's it. Also a singer.
Okay.
A chorus singer.
Yes.
Sing at church.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a bloused, a member of the Women's Fellowship of the Reformed Church in Zambia.
Okay, and so there you have it, very colorful individual. But, you know, we must say to you from here in the Bahamas and through the Essentials, you know, congratulations. You are stepping into a realm which, as you say, is traditionally dominated by males and making your mark in such a short time, you know, at 38 years of age, 15 years into the actual profession. And you are a part owner, CEO of a significant organization. But you got here where you are today in a very interesting way. You're an investigative journalist. And you have taken special interest in unearthing certain things. One of the terms that you use is that accurate. The story has to be told. And that statement, based on the research that I've done, represents an unequivocal exposition of whatsoever the story is in its absolute truest form. Talk to us about that.
In my journalism field, I've realized that people would want a journalist to tell a story that best suits their interests.
Mm-hmm.
Many people don't want you to do a story that will expose what they are doing wrong. And so what makes your work as a journalist unique is the fact that you have to uncover what people don't want to be heard. And basically, that's been my focus in my professional journey, looking at the stories that impact human life, the stories that bring out injustice against fellow human beings,
mm-hmm.
especially by those in authority, by those entrusted with resources to manage on behalf of the ordinary people.
Yeah, basically, and, the state.
Sorry?
So basically, the state.
Yes, the state, mm-hmm. yes. Most of the times, you have to choose your position in terms of what you want to bring out and why you should bring it out. Because obviously not everyone has the courage and the confidence to start bringing out stories against the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of time for you to gather out information and for you to have the truth before you. Because I believe that the work of a journalist is based on the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't make any news. We basically write it as it is, as it has happened. And what must be told certainly has to be told,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of who feels uncomfortable about it. But if it is news, it has to be told in that way. And so basically that's what I believe in. Our work is centered on public interest, not self-interest. We don't represent ourselves. We don't represent our feelings. We don't represent our thoughts, but we present our facts as they are and as they should be presented. So basically, that's been my belief and that's been my drive as a journalist.
Yeah. Another statement you made is that talking about how you are inspired, and you said what inspire you is the public confidence that you have garnered over the years. What has led to, you know, Mwape, you know, being embraced by the public, being given this confidence? What in particular have you done? What did, you know, critical turning point in your career or major milestone has caused you to be, to develop this goodwill with your public?
Well, it's because every other story that I have to tell is verified to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story that is not usually, it's a story that does not end into refuting allegations or people coming out to say, no, this is not right, this is not true. So I always take time to verify the facts,
mm-hmm,
before bringing out the stories. And so most of the times it's a confidence and that people have developed in this journalist, because they know that if she brings out the truth, then if she brings out a story, then it must be true. And also the confidence that my news sources have in me in unveiling the truth,
mm-hmm,
knowing that if I have to protect their identity, I usually do that. And none of those, you know, my whistleblowers and informers have ended up being exposed as a result of them revealing certain truths to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in itself has created a lot of confidence around my informers, around the people that give me out information. But also the fact that if I bring out a story, I'm not ending at, okay, telling it, this is ends there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of a solution-seeking journalist. If there's a problem with water services in a particular area, I will highlight the problem, but also get the authorities to state what they're doing to address the problem, and also to just get them into, you know, dealing with the problem head on. Mm-hmm. But also, if it's corruption, I don't end at just highlighting the corruption, but also making sure that law enforcers are working and, bring the culprits to book.
Mm.
And where the state has to recover stolen assets, I pursue the story to that point where law enforcers have to do the recovery and the state has to, you know, take account of these cases until they are completely exhausted. So I'm a bit consistent when I deal with the particular story, and I follow it to the latter end.
Yes.
So that's another area that has led to people have some confidence in what I do.
So, you know, you put out a story, and a person can therefore, they have over time come to know that whatsoever you have there is true. And there's evidence, because ultimately the authorities were acting on the information that you have uncovered. You can show, you can point to solutions. So beyond just being, I shouldn't say just, because being a journalist is a big thing. Beyond being a journalist, you're also extending that to provide, if you will, a social enhancement for the benefit of your fellow citizens within Zambia. You are seeking to ensure that the enforcement which should follow a particular allegation actually takes place. So you're doing more than journalism in a very fundamental way, are you not?
Exactly, because I believe that it's not enough just to tell a story,
mm-hmm,
but a story must show impact.
Yes.
A story must be able to bring out a solution. It's not a matter of us saying there's a problem here. It's a matter of us also engaging those that should be part of the solution. And for me, it is more satisfying on my part as a journalist if I brought out the problem, and then because of my bringing out of that problem, and then a solution has been found, then I feel I'm part of the solution, and that gives me job satisfaction.
Yes.
Because then I feel I have achieved what I need to achieve. For me, it's not just about telling a story, but it's also about leaving an impact in the lives of those that, you know, are affected or are concerned about a particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of journalism that I always want to advocate for. That's the kind of journalism that I always encourage my team, even at Crown Television, to pursue. If there's a problem, then there should be a solution somewhere. So a media institution is not to be used to, you know, just bring out the problems and leave them hanging just there. But we are part of the solution to that problem. So if there's a problem, then there should be a solution. Then how do we come in also to identify who should be part of that solution? So basically, that's the journalism that we're trying to push at Crown. So we're looking at solution-seeking journalism as opposed to problem search and findings kind of journalism.
Yes. Yeah. And isn't that a wonderful thing? Because, of course, the press is often regarded as the fourth estate, right? And by the fourth estate, that would be a quasi-extension of government itself. You have the judiciary, you have the legislature, you have the executive, and the fourth estate being the press. And to the extent that you take the approach that you actually do and be able to impact the country socially or otherwise, well, with finding real solution to real practical problems, which you in the first instance have unearthed, I think that is a commendable way to go. And I think it's a way in which journalism really could bring about deep rooted practical change to a country. I'm here just envisioning what you are doing. I think, you know, that's a tremendous thing. But you do this at great personal risk. There is the risk of threat and intimidation, threat of, criminal prosecution. But you go on, how do you cope on a day-to-day basis in an environment where essentially at this point in time, the press is not, you know, as free as one would desire it to be?
Well, yes. I think with the change of government, we've seen a lot of tolerance with the current government in terms of them embracing and appreciating the work of the journalists.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen less threats. We've seen less intimidation, and the current environment is a bit favorable. And though we don't really have the actual laws that we feel should be able to back our work, but we see a lot of goodwill from the current government in terms of supporting the we've seen a lot of cases of corruption being exposed in the current government, and we see the government institutions taking action as opposed to, threatening media institutions that expose such cases. As we speak today, we have an issue to do with the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Commission, who had to resign after several corruption allegations are raised against him. And what we the allegations were came through the media. And what we saw was this director general resigning, and law enforcers also stating their position in terms of them carrying out investigations against him. And then we see the president as well dissolving the entire board of the Anti-Corruption Commission. So these are clear indications that there's much more tolerance in terms of what the current government is doing, or the way the current government is responding to raised against them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of issues have been raised in terms of how they are managing the fight against corruption. And we have seen a bit more proactiveness in terms of ensuring that those that are accused of corruption are being investigated, they're being suspended, some of them being laid off from office. Unlike in the previous regime, where if you bring out a case of corruption, the first reaction will be like challenging you as a journalist to prove yours, that you have the correct facts. Mm-hmm. And you find those in the government are on the forefront defending the corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to stretch, out to get as much facts as possible for them to, step in and, act. Because then they would have realized that you have too much information to bring out, and there's no need to, further justify certain conduct. So the current media environment is not really that. I think the current government is media friendly, and we've seen the president in particular opening up to the media, where we are usually invited for press conferences and allowed to raise questions directly to the president on different matters affecting and concerning our country. So there's a bit of tolerance and a bit of more engagement with the media. The Ministry of Information in particular, almost every week has press conferences at which media institutions are invited when they address their cabinet resolutions, and they open up to questions and answers. And journalists basically ask questions without feeling intimidated,
mm-hmm.
and without feeling uncomfortable about it, because I think the environment is a bit flexible and a bit conducive. Though ultimately what every other journalist would want is to see the enactment of the laws that support the work of a journalist, like the which has now moved quite a great deal in terms of the president has endorsed it. And what we are just looking at now is for our parliament to, finally enact it. But so far, so good in terms of a government's willingness to work with the media and to support the work of the media.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear that, the environment has shifted from one where intimidation would be the norm, would be expected. They would be less proactive to act on clear indication, but not a whole lot of information, and you have to, do all of the heavy lifting. But it's certainly good to see that there is, from a media point of view, from a free press point of view, that there is progress. And it's always a good thing when the political directorate, the executive especially, recognize the importance of the press in the operation of a country. Because after all, democracy is enhanced by the work of the press. The press helps to, things are going right, and where they're not going right, to expose them. And so that, I think, is a very important step forward. I want to take you back to maybe earlier in your career, where there was a critical moment where you actually saw two persons being killed, and you have listed in my research, you have listed that as a turning point, a watershed moment in your career to this point. Talk to us about that.
Well, I think you're referring to the incident in Kampasa,
mm-hmm.
Eastern side of Zambia. I was working for a movie TV during that time. That should be in June 2023. I do remember very well. It was quite a devastating moment for me. I would usually bring out stories to do with the legal settlement of some families around the area, which belonged to the military department of the government. And so there had been a lot of debate around the military department of the government wanting to remove the squatters from the land. And the people, the families on the other hand, wanted to the government to consider relocating them to another safer place. So during that argument between the authorities and the people, apparently the authorities resorted to removing the people by force. And so on the 14th of June, I recall, on the 14th of June 2023, there was a shooting incident in that particular area. And we saw two people being shot dead. So I, as I had already had contact with those people that were squatting there, I was called to the area, and I rushed there. And when we reached the incident with the two men that had been killed laying in a pool of blood, and well, that was one of the most horrible moments of my life. I knew most of those people because I would speak to them most of the times. I would interview them regarding their plight, because then the late President Patrick Mwanawasa had already made the decree that they should be resettled in an area called the Mwanawasa Resettlement Area. But apparently other people had gotten, you know, onto the land where they were supposed to have been resettled. So some of those squatters could not be accommodated, hence they remained on the same land that belonged to the military officers. So, well, when I arrived at the scene, I found two people were already dead, and one had a gunshot on his leg and was heavily bleeding. Arranged for transport for the one person that had survived the shooting incident, and who alerted the police to come and, you know, pick up the other two men that had been killed. Those Clement Mlongo and Pumulo Lungwangwa, the ones that were killed. So I had to pursue that story for a long time. I did more than 100 stories to try and pursue government to, you know, take responsibility for the death of those people. There was at one point an inquiry which was instituted into the matter, and there was compensation that was eventually given to the affected families.
So, you know, that's, you know, touching, because here are individuals that you interact with on a regular basis, and to then turn up and see two of them actually dead. But of course, you did what you usually do. You stayed with the story, over 100 stories, you said, that at the end of the day, while you can't bring them back to life, but certainly their families would have benefited from whatsoever compensation would have been put out there. And this is kind of the reason that in Zambia you are known generally as a fearless journalist. You are seen as an individual who is tenacious, and you go after, and just listening to you, you're not doing this in any aggressive or adversarial manner. You're just basically following the story and trying to, as best as you can, unearth the truth. And so you have received awards in this regard. One award you received in 2015 was for Courage in Journalism. Tell us about that, and what did that mean to you as an individual?
Well, the Courage in Journalism Award is the biggest award I have to my name. I'm the second Zambian to have won the award from the late Lucy Sichone. There was a journalist called Lucy Sichone in Zambia. So she had been one of the first Zambian journalists to have been awarded by the International Women Media Fund. And then so I'm the second journalist and surviving, the only surviving journalist with the record of winning that particular award. It's a big award for me, and for an organization, an international organization that's based in the U.S. to recognize the work that I'm doing in Zambia. It was a very humbling experience. It was a very exciting experience. Because, you know, sometimes you do certain works without realizing the impact that you're making out there. You think it's only Zambia that is watching what you're doing and appreciating what you're doing. But then to have a feeling that international organizations are seeing what what I'm doing and feel the need to honor me for that, I think that's a most great experience and most it's a wonderful experience and a wonderful moment for me. So in that particular award, actually one of the stories that they looked at in getting me the award was the same one, the same killing of those two men in Lusaka, as one of the stories that depicted courage, because apparently I was the only journalist in Zambia, you know, pursuing that story, because most of the journalists were scared to tell a story that seemed to be against the military officers, the people that, you know, are holding on guns. And people were just, like, really scared to tell the story because, again, also the political environment at that time was not very favorable with the media, the works of the media, and highlighting, you know, negativity against the government. So I did, during that particular time, I ended up finding myself to be the only journalist, you know, telling the story. Apart from that story, there was a story about some inmates in one of the biggest prisons in Zambia that were killed as a result of a stampede. I think there was some tear gas that was fired in the prison. The prison authorities were searching for some inmates that they suspected could have had possession of weapons, because there were two dangerous inmates that had freed them. So there was that siege, and then in the process, I don't know how they ended up firing tear gas, and inmates, you know, stepped on each other. There was a lot of stampede, and about 14 inmates died. That particular story again. I was the only one that told that story, and the authorities were challenging me on the truths. I entered the mortuary to see the bodies, to verify the causes of death, through a post-mortem that was done at least two. And again, on that story, I was the only one telling the story. So when the U.S. state guard was based in Zambia, did that, on human rights in Zambia, those stories were, you know, highlighted as some of the forms of human rights violations in Zambia at that time. So,
yeah, I think we're losing you a little bit. I don't know, maybe your signal is dropping, but we're hearing that, you know, so you were doing these stories and basically no one else in Zambia was following up on those stories, and you caught the attention of this international institution which saw you reporting and unearthing issues of human rights transgression and so on. You can continue.
Yes. Yes, so apparently most of the stories that I did ended up being highlighted as some of the worst forms of human rights violations by the Zambian government from a U.S. Reports that was compiled. And so those are some of the stories that were picked as they were recognizing me as the most, you know, courageous in Zambia.
Yeah. And it sounds like it, because, you know, in a profession dominated by males, and you are out there the only female who is following up on these things and highly motivated by ensuring that the truth comes to the fore and to protect the interests of these individuals. One of the things you said about this award at the time, that the Courage Award means a lot to me. It means that my work is not just in vain. It is not only seen by Zambians, but by the world as well. It means that I must continue working harder, unearthing the injustices and corruption, which is stilting our development as a nation. So, you know, you're using your leverage as a journalist, not simply to, you know, put forward these stories, but you have a bigger picture in mind. This is about the development of your country, love for country, wanting to see Zambia be the best country that it can be, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I feel that is the major work. Why the major reason why, as media, we are called the fourth estate. Mm-hmm. We must be part of the developmental agenda of a country. So in every reporting that I do, I must ask myself how this reportage is helping my country develop, is helping my country, you know,
excellent,
be at a better position. So that's the major question. If I have to write a story, I have to ask myself, so what if I write a story? Benefit of the nation, mm-hmm, how is it helping my country, you know, develop or move from one stage to the other? So that's the major question that I always want even my team at Crown, mm-hmm, at Crown TV, to, you know, ask themselves as they do the story.
Yeah.
If I do the story, what is the major impact of it? How is it helping my country, you know, grow from this stage to this stage?
Yeah. And that is powerful. One of the refrain that we use on this show is, whatsoever is done should be in the best interest of country. And I think this is an important, good point for us to pause and take a break. And when we come back, we will continue the conversation. We want to learn a little bit more about you, because we understand, based on the research, that initially you were not interested in journalism, but you actually wanted to become a lawyer. So we are having a conversation with Mwape Kamwenda. She's all the way over there in Zambia. And we are learning about her work in journalism, the fact that she's a courageous investigative journalist recognized internationally. And so we're having this conversation on The Essential, the way we do it, to highlight and to inspire. So don't move. Come right back.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risks, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. Our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
There's a hero. If you look inside your heart, you don't have to be afraid of what you are. If you reach into your soul, and the sorrow that you know will melt away. And then a hero comes along with the strength to carry on. And you cast your fears aside, and you know you can survive. So when you feel like hope is gone, inside you and be strong, and you'll finally see the truth that a hero lies in you.
And it is without a doubt that a hero lies within the confines of our guests, within the entity of her, in her work, in the things that she do, the way she does it. Not simply unearthing the story, not simply seeking to tell the truth, as she said, the story must be told. but being solutions oriented, to follow, to stay with the story until there's benefit brought to bear for those who are impacted. And that really is a wonderful way of maybe describing how the Fourth Estate ought to operate, to helping a country grow and develop, to ensuring that those without a voice get a voice, and those who may be wrong, who may be armed, who may be in the persons in authority, ultimately are held accountable and take responsibility for same. Wonderful, wonderful job being done by Mwape Kumwenda. And so when she is recognized by the International Women's Media Foundation for her work, as she has described it up to this point, and all the research that I've done suggests or confirms that what she's saying is exactly that. We've seen it. It sends a message, I would think, to us listening, persons far and wide, that whatsoever it is that you do, you have the ability to make an impact. Yes, journalism may be closer associated to some of the actions which are needed, but if you take the view as she does, where she says, before she starts a story, she asks a question, how does this impact the growth and development of my country? If we're guided by that in what we do, in all to do on a day-to-day basis, believe me, the impact on the country could be fundamental, could be significant. And I would commend you and commend me to really take on that mantra and embrace it. So, Mwape, the thing I'm seeing here is that initially you wanted to be a lawyer. What changed your mind? What is it that, you know, say, no, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. That is just, there's not enough action there. I want to go into journalism so I can jump in the middle of the fire and I can be at the forefront of making serious changes to my country. Why did you shift from law?
Not really 100% shifted from law. At the time, I was looking for a place to study law. Most of the universities and colleges were already running their academic calendar, so I couldn't get enrolled at that time. The education system in Zambia at that time was such that if I stood for my examinations, for my O-level examinations in November, or I'll finish my exams maybe around late November or early December, and then I'll only get my results the following year in, let's say, May. So by the time I'm getting my results, the following year's academic calendar is already running. So it was at the time I got my results to now push me into the School of Law. I was quite late to get enrolled into the School of Law. And so because my father, my late dad, didn't want me to stay long at home to, you know, wait for another academic year for me to get enrolled into the School of Law, so he asked me to check around if I could find any place into the School of Law. And because I couldn't find any, my husband then, we were dating, we were looking around for a school. And he proposed that I get into the journalism school because he asked me what my motive was, what was driving me into this law school. And I was of a view that I would want to do law to help seek justice, especially victims of gender-based violence, you know, defilement and rape cases, because at that time there were a lot of cases being heard around defilement and around rape, and there seemed to have been less support in terms of legal supports to mostly victims. And so that was my main area of interest in going into the School of Law. And so discussing that proposal with my now husband, he was of the view that even through journalism, we could try and seek justice for persons that have been victims of gender-based violence and sexual abuse. And so based on that, you know, understanding, and that's how I got into the journalism school. So starting out as a trainee journalist, I got myself attached to reporting from the courts. And so I did a lot of gender-based violence-related cases, getting them from the community to, you know, getting them into the courts, a hearing, covering the hearings and to the judgments. So I did quite a number of stories around, you know, gender-based violence, and also got myself a best gender reporting from the Media Institute of Southern Africa in Zambia. So basically, it's like, okay, I have somehow achieved what I wanted to achieve. I have done what I've always wanted to do, though not really as a lawyer, but now as a journalist. I have pursued the cases that I wanted to pursue, and they have gotten people get the justice that they want and
deserved. Yes.
Yes, through my reporting, yeah. So because most of the stories, I think the consistency attached to certain stories also puts those that are handling the matters on their toes to ensure that they do the right thing when they handle the cases. So most of the cases that I have ended up covering, either from the start of the case, from the investigation point to the hearing, court hearing, and to up to the judgment, I have seen a lot of cases ending up into convictions and into suspects, you know, being jailed. But also, it created an opportunity again for many women to open up on the issues of the abuse that they, you know, could have been enduring in their marriages, in their relationships. So we saw a lot of people coming out in the open to talk about their issues because maybe they got encouraged because somebody that I covered ended up into, you know, a court case which resulted into a conviction, and it sent some form of fear in potential perpetrators. So there's been a lot of change in terms of how people handle gender-based violence cases in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of openness that has been seen where people are able to open up and talk about the abuse, and you take down the cases to court. And also we've seen the government also coming in to expedite the process of hearing gender-based violence-related cases. Currently, we have the fast-track courts. So magistrates are commanded to, you know, expedite the process of hearing and concluding gender-based violence-related cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my history.
Yeah, that's
so
how
I did more than 10 years of court reporting, actually.
Yeah. So that's how you made your way from law, transition from law to journalism. But certainly the link remained, because I believe that through journalism, I would still live up to my aspirations of helping those in need. And that's exactly what you started with. That was your intention in terms of doing law. And certainly it continues to be the thing which is at the center of the way you do journalism.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, help us, because we're on this side of the pond. Certainly I have not, and many of us listening have not had the opportunity to be in Zambia. We have been able to see you through social media, see you through YouTube or documentaries and so on. But just give us a flavor of the lay of the land. How is Zambia at this point in time, economically, socially? You touch a bit on some of the issues around corruption and how they affect development, gender-based violence. But, in a nutshell, kind of give us a flavor of what Zambia is today.
Well, currently Zambia is a peaceful nation, and I think we boast of being one of the most peaceful African nations. Zambia is a land-linked country, surrounded by, you know, several African countries, and it's considered to be a friend of many African countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of the peace that we enjoy, because of the friendliness that Zambians are meant to be, and because we are also accommodative in terms of how we receive foreigners and tourists.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's a great tourist destination. With a lot of tourism sites, man-made and man-made falls and lakes and animals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a good tourism site. But in terms of the socio-economic aspect, I think we are struggling economically, are struggling to resolve debts. We have so much debt as a country that we are struggling to attend to, but also we are a country rich in mineral resources. We are a country that many look forward to invest into because of the rich, you know, natural resource that we have. The rich minerals that we have, and basically it's a country that is that many are eyeing, you know, to invest in because of the peace, because of the conducive environment that exists.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, in a nutshell, that's who we are and that's where we are. So the major problem is the high cost of living and the few resources or finances that are currently in circulation. So there's little money in circulation. So many people are struggling to meet their ends meet, and lack of employment also is quite huge.
Yeah.
A lot of migration taking place. People are moving from the rural areas of Zambia to the capital city, Lusaka, and also to the copper belt, where we have a lot of mining activities taking place.
Yeah, person seeking work.
Seeking work, yes. So we see Lusaka and the copper belt a bit more congested than any other areas. But we're seeing the government has come up with a policy of decentralizing its operations. So we see a lot of new employments created and in those remote areas, and people are being basically sent out in those remote areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what Zambia looks like in a nutshell.
Yeah, but as you said, you know, peaceful countries, that mean there is a relatively speaking, a good investment environment potentially for persons to come in and to invest in the country and to help it to grow and develop. And I would suspect that the government is placing a lot of effort on that, maybe attracting foreign direct investment to help to solve some of the unemployment issues which are afoot. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, you know, I was saying to you that given the peaceful environment, which is now more conducive, would be more conducive to external parties investing in Zambia, I would suspect that the government is making a push, may potentially be making a push in that direction to attract foreign direct investment. Is that the case?
Yes. Actually, yes. The Zambian government is making a lot of efforts to attract foreign direct investment, mostly in the area of mining, agriculture, and There's a more emphasis on the mining, agriculture, health, and education sector, because that's where a lot of emphasis has been placed, and also on investing into small scale businesses, mm-hmm. because we see a lot of Zambians getting into small businesses, because I think the business environment is very favorable currently. Mm-hmm. And so the government has seen it and has seen an opportunity to invest in its own people so that they could also grow their businesses. They could also do something to improve their businesses. We have a lot of land for farming. And so there's been an encouragement to diversify in our farming activities, because we have over the years focused on growing maize and wheat and cassava. So there's now a talk of, us diversifying farming activities. And then to that effect, the Zambian government is giving out soft loans for those that investing into different kind of, farming activities. And so in terms of food security, I think we are safe. We are on a safer side. We actually, most of the times, have to export some of our produce, mm-hmm. To our neighboring countries like Malawi and DRC and Zimbabwe. So, there's a lot of opportunity given to mostly Zambians to grow themselves in the farming business and in other small-scale kind of businesses.
Yeah, so there's some positives.
Yes, there's some positives, and also a lot of encouragement in terms of skills development and training. We see a lot of scholarships being offered by the government, and also the government deliberately, supporting skilled personnel, especially in the carpentry. A lot of Zambians that are maybe making furniture being engaged by the government to supply, for example, in government schools. And then the current government has cropped off fees on schools. So from primary education, every child has to go in school without paying anything. Mm-hmm. So we have a deliberate policy from the current government.
Are these new policy shift in terms of the current government versus what was there previously?
Yes. It's the current chip. It's the current government that has introduced a free education policy.
Mm-hmm.
So these are new policies that the current government has introduced, and so they also there was in the previous government an introduction of what was called the Constituency Development Fund. The current government has modified the usage of that fund. It's up also for offering scholarships to vulnerable children that want to go to college and they can't afford to pay for their university or college fees. So through the Constituency Development Funds, people are able to get, support and go to their university or college. So that's like a different shift.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more emphasis on the current government for Zambians to be educated, and clearly an environment has been created for everyone to, access education, regardless of where they are, regardless of how vulnerable they may be. But there's always an opportunity that has been created for them to get to, college and university. So that's their main, I think that's the main focus of the current government,
mm-hmm.
to ensure that most of its citizens are well educated.
Yeah.
And also to ensure that those that are into business are also given a favorable environment for them to operate.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of opportunities for those that want to be educated. There are also opportunities for those that want to venture into businesses.
Yeah. I think those are positive things, because at the end of the day, if you're going to grow a country, then certainly those who are elected have to be seen to be putting into place the policies which are going to create the environment for the future. And as it stands now, just moving into making early education accessible by making it free, and education all the way up the chain, in another 5-10 years, then clearly we would anticipate that there would be an upward shift in the quality of skills which are available, the quantity of individuals who will be available to do more skill and more technical things, and that in turn will help to drive the Zambian economy. One of the areas I want to ask you about: Zambia is a mineral rich country, and one of the things which a lot of African countries suffer from is that while they are mineral rich, the rights to these minerals, the riches, are kind of not owned by the local persons. They're certainly owned by external entities. Some of them started from as way back as being influenced at the time of colonialism. How is that arrangement in Zambia? Does the country by and large owns most of the rights to its minerals?
That's another problem that we have as a country. Most of our mines are not owned by Zambians. Most of the mines are owned to a greater extent by foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't get to benefit as much from our minerals as we should, as the indigenous Zambians.
Mm-hmm.
So, are owned by foreigners. I think there's been a debate around us, around the Zambian government, trying to do an assessment in terms of establishing how much minerals we could have as a nation, but then the capacity to get the findings, to get the research done properly, and to get the accurate information as regards to how much minerals we have, we don't seem to have that capacity to get the information mm-hmm. that we want in the first place, and we don't seem to have also the capacity to fully run our mines. So most of our mines, most of our minerals are not in the hands of Zambians.
That's unfortunate, and I would hope that this thrust in the educational direction would help to kind of fix some of that. So I'm coming to Zambia shortly, and so when I get there, what is the path when I get to Zambia?
You must eat nshima, our staple food.
And that would be?
You must eat a lot of corn, a lot of corn, because that's what we have mostly here in Zambia, yeah. And that's our staple food.
You say it's a shima?
You must be ready to gain, yeah. Shima.
What constitutes shima? What goes into creating that dish?
So it's made from maize, from mm-hmm. corn. The corn is dried up, and then it's grinded into powder form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we call milimil. And then you just cook it with water. So you boil the water, and then you cook it you mix the water with the powdered corn,
mm-hmm.
which is now millimeal, turned into a millimeal.
Mm.
And then you make it a bit hard, eat it with any choice of relish. For Zambia, we have quite fresh fish and tasty fish.
Mm-hmm.
So you could taste some of our fish with different types of fish. Small and breams.
Yeah.
Smaller ones, tiny ones. Yeah, so you could test that.
Okay. Well, when I get there, certainly I will have to try out some of that. We're going to take ourselves another break here. When we come back, we want to kind of get into a little bit. You mentioned, you know, you are a Christian, and you are also a singer. So we want to hear just a little bit more about that aspect of your life, and you know, how did you grow up? You know, where did you grow up? What was, if any, you know, some of the struggles that you had to overcome before getting into this wonderful world of journalism, where you're making such a, you know, big mark in Zambia, but in such a way which you're recognized internationally. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're having this conversation with Mwape Kamwenda, all the way from Zambia. She is the CEO of Crown TV. There, a journalist at the age of 38, making a significant mark in an arena which is largely dominated by men. As a fearless journalist, recognized for the work she has been done by international agencies. So we'll continue the conversation just to hear just a little bit more about her Christian life, her singing life, and how she made it to this point. Don't move. Come right back.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
As we invoke the presence of Buju Banton singing, asking for strength, asking for guidance, asking for the ability to be resilient, to be persevering in the face of challenges, which clearly, our guest tonight must demonstrate. There's absolutely no way you are in an environment as an investigative journalist, working in an environment which, while now is more conducive, was not the case, and has done so distinguishing herself with great excellence. distinguishing herself in such a way that she's been recognized internationally. But in her very own words, it's not simply, I am going to unearth the story. But she says, the truth must be told. And even after telling the truth, she's committed to staying with the story, with the single view of, well, maybe not single view, but with a couple of views. One, that those who are hurt or injured are heard, are compensated, are treated fairly. And then secondly, and maybe more overarchingly more important, is the fact that she consistently asks herself this question. Is this, or how is this going to impact the growth and development of my country? A wonderful, wonderful way to look at things. And then I think at this stage, an appropriate point to ask you, where do you get this strength? Is this because of your Christian grounding that you take on this fearless persona of going out there every single day, facing potential dangers, facing potential intimidation, but making the decision that you are going to follow through to the end? Tell us about that. Tell us about your Christian story.
Well, yes, of course. As a Christian, I always believe that you must know the truth, and the truth definitely will set you free. There's no one who's been condemned for standing with the truth. We all appreciated and acknowledged for sticking to the truth. Because definitely a lie will always be a lie, and the truth will always be the truth. So that has been my major, guidance to my work, that in everything I do, I must be able to stick to the truth, because no one can challenge it. It always stands. Yeah. So coming to my Christian background, yes, it has had a lot of influence on the work that I do, because my day-to-day work does not part away from my Christian beliefs. Yeah.
And so you grew up in a family. Are you an only child, or are there multiple children, mother, father? Give us some idea of, the younger version of you.
Okay, so I grew up in Kabwe, in Central Province of Zambia, in a family of seven. I'm the second born, and in a family comprising of three girls and four boys. So I'm the oldest daughter of the family, and I grew up raised by Christian parents. My mother, my dad, who is now deceased, have been Christians in the Reformed Church of Zambia. So that's the church under which we were all raised as children. So I got baptized in the church as an infant in 1986 in Kabwe. And from Kabwe, I moved to the capital city, continued with the same church, and got married in the same church where I found my husband in the same church. And we have also raised our children in the same church. We have three children who are also raised in the same church. And I joined the Women's Fellowship about 2 years ago and got bloused as a member of the Women's Fellowship of this church. Singing in the choir, I started when I was very young. I started, I think, when I was around 14 years in Kawe, and I've been singing since then. So I just moved to the capital city and joined another singing group called the Revelation Church Choir. which I currently are singing. And so for the last 38 years, I think I've lived my life in this Christian family environment, and I have been raised that way, and that's the same way I continue to raise my children in the same church and in the same beliefs that I have always stood by for the years of my life.
Mm-hmm. So your upbringing, the things which have been imparted into you by your parents, by your the fellowship within the church has now undergirded your journey as a journalist, as an adult, as a professional. And one of the things I read, which you said, is that unless the evil of people is exposed, they will continue with it. Talk to us about that. Give us a little bit of insight of your thinking as it relates to the work. So we know what you do. You have explained that to us. But you are not simply wanting to, as we have established, write the story. But you're going to the core. You're saying, unless the evil is exposed, they will continue doing it. So your objective is to create an environment where these things no longer take place, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Because we live in a society where wrongs sometimes are justified based on the environment that has been created. Mm-hmm. For example, we're coming from a period where women were told they have to endure every other treatment in their marriages, and they must not expose, you know, the bad side of their hand, hold secrets. They must not say anything, no matter what they go through, because they will be embarrassing their husbands. They'll be exposing what is meant to be in the bedroom outside. And so when we come out and say, no, this is an element of gender-based violence, so you must come out and, you know, speak about it. You must bring it to an end. So when they see another person coming out and talking about it, then they realize, oh, this is abuse. So all along have been abused and meant to believe that, you know, it's normal for a woman, you know, to be beaten by the husband. It's normal for a woman, you know, to stay in an abusive marriage, because a man, the perception that a man expresses their love to their women differently. So now that people are seeing that it's wrong, then they also, you know, come out and be able to tell their own stories. So sometimes we become comfortable with the abnormality. Sometimes we become comfortable with the evil we know and the evil we stay with, because no one has ever said it's evil. So the devil has become the good, the angel, in essence. So unless it is taught, it's made, somebody's meant to believe that this is not right, then they will be able to, you know, stand up and, you know, demand for what they know is right. So in an environment where there's maybe a low, you know, meet the social needs, and in most cases, men are the ones providing for the family. So this woman feels vulnerable. If I reported my husband who is abusing me, then my children will not have food. I'll also suffer because I'm also not doing anything. So they end up just concealing, you know, mm-hmm. the whole abuse to protect, you know, a certain
lifestyle kind
of standard they're living. Yeah. And they are, you know, gotten comfortable with.
Right, and in at the end of the day, they suffer in silence. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to raise another issue, critical issue that currently Zambia is struggling with, and that's to do with mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of mental psychological patients that are being attended to in most of our health facilities, owing to the fact that they have been concealing abuse, you know, they've been keeping it to themselves and that it's been eating them up. And so they've not been able to tell anyone about what they are going through. And so they've ended up, you know, into being, you know, mental health patients. So it's one of those stories that, you know, people need to come out and talk about. Because if they don't, then they risk, getting into mental health issues.
Is there a stigma attached to mental health issues in Zambia like it is on this side of the world? Here in the Bahamas, in fact, I would say in the African diaspora, the black people, we don't like to talk about mental issues at all. We don't talk about issues per se, and consequently, that always lead to, unhealthy circumstances.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. There's a lot of stigma around that. So people end up, confining themselves in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So people just keep their issues to themselves. There's a lot of fear around, sharing their problems with friends, because if I share with this friend, I'll hear it with other people mocking you about it instead of trying to help you resolve the problem. But you become a laughingstock. You become a subject of, criticism.
And ridicule.
And so people end up just, keeping their misery to themselves. So, and then you find people get, to psychiatric levels, mm-hmm. and situations get to a worse stage. So if it's not drug abuse, you just find, people just, going crazy.
Yeah. I think it's also unfortunate, but certainly the work you do in bringing light through your stories is I think a powerful way of changing the culture, especially as it relates to women and the way they live their life, the way they would have now made the shift that what was seen as accepted is actually abuse. So it's culture shifting, and I think in this manner, your journalism, the journalism of others, those that you lead, have the potential to further impact the social fabric of your country, to get to a stage where persons are more comfortable talking about these things, more comfortable seeking help, and ultimately it leads to a healthier country. And that, I think, is a positive thing.
Yeah, sure. So currently on Crown Television, I produce a program called Valor Woman, specifically to take a shift from what we have always done as a media, where we have told bad stories and negative stories about women, portraying women as victims, portraying women as, vulnerable persons.
Mm-hmm.
So on this particular program, we basically profile women that are making an impact, women that have risen beyond their challenges to become managers, to become
powerful,
great entrepreneurs and business persons. So we basically focus on the positive part of a woman, and it's meant to inspire, to encourage and motivate other women to rise to their full potential, because we're trying to cure a perception that has been created that women are for house chores, women are for housework, they can't work, they can't do anything beyond that. And I think we have had a lot of nice stories told. And also as a country, a lot of example has been laid. In the previous government, we had a female vice president. Even in the current government, we have a vice. It's given a lot of hope. mm-hmm. for the women that they could do meaningful yeah. things.
Something to aspire towards.
Exactly. And we have had the first female speaker of the National Assembly mm-hmm. in Zambia currently. And then also in the Drug Enforcement Commission, the Director General is a woman. So we've had quite a number of positions where women have been placed, and they're doing quite a number of good things. So since Zambia has the highest, Zambia's highest population is captured by women and girls, I think the changes that are being done in terms of accommodating women is slowly bringing a shift in terms of how, you know, ultimately this might translate into greater development for the nation of Zambia, considering that 60%, more than 60% of its population accounts for women female. And girls.
And that is important yeah. to focus on the growth and development. And we could have this conversation going on for hours and hours, but unfortunately, we are running clean out of time. So at this point, we want to, you know, get your last word, a word you want to leave. Because I'm sure there's a young lady someplace in the Bahamas or within the sphere of our reach who is listening to you and who is inspired, has already been inspired, but certainly just want to leave something with yeah. them to say, you know, it's possible that you can, in the face of adversity, make a difference. Talk to them.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I just want to talk to somebody this moment to assure them that you can do something. You can be what you want to be. It's not a matter of following other patterns that have existed over the years. You can create your own path. You can create your own ambitions, and you can focus on what you want to achieve. You can set your own goals, and you can achieve your own goals. So it's not a matter of doing something, but you have to do something for purposes of achieving something. So it's not a matter of working at something, but it's working at something in order to achieve something. So don't do anything for nothing. Do something for something. That's my encouragement to colleagues. So as a journalist, I took the field to seek solutions to problems and not just telling a story. So you can also set your own focus and standards, and you surely can achieve your own goals and your own, you know, ambitions. Thank you for having me.
It was certainly my pleasure to have you, Mwape Kumwenda. Certainly very inspirational, very informative discussion, getting a peep into Zambia as a country, but more importantly, getting a peep into your life and the impact that you're making at a national and international level. It was our pleasure having you, and we look forward to future interactions. So stay safe, stay good, and we will see you one day on that side of the pond. You've been listening to The Essentials, The Reset, with my guest, Mwape Kumwenda from Zambia, the CEO of Crown TV, an individual who is doing significant work over on that side of the world, someone we ought to be proud of. Us on this side from the diaspora, that's our Luther, and we know that one of these days we're going to hear more of her. We always like to end the show by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that is left to say is be good, walk good, one love, and good night.
How can we say we love God when we don't love ourselves? How can we bring peace to this nation when we keep on fighting among ourselves?